you know, with this small little idea of, hey, why don't you get a pet? And then there's all of a sudden there's a baby kangaroo running around this person's house. His whole life changed, right? It's fun stories like that. When you get healthcare providers that care into people's homes, lots can happen.
Welcome to another episode of Higher Learning. I am your host, Oz Rashid. And today we are joined by the VP of Strategic Partnerships at Spirus Health, Mike Harlow. Mike, how you doing?
I'm good, Oz. How are you? Happy to be
here. I'm great. I'm so excited. It's a beautiful day in South Florida. I got the sun on my back, and I'm really looking forward to this conversation. So let's dive right into it. I love a little, we've talked about your story. I'm so interested in how you got to where you're at. But I want to first understand, you know, VP of Strategic Partnerships, that can mean a lot of different things. So I want you to tell us a little bit about that role and then your company, Spirus Health. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, aren't titles the worst?
Yeah, sometimes they can mean one thing at one company and another at another company. That's why I like to ask, because you never know what kind of details you're going to get.
Yeah, I mean, you've got a cool one, right? You're founder and CEO, but you know, VP of Strategic Partnerships, that's not how I think about it, Oz. You know, I think of someone, I'm someone that I help find patients that are sick that want to dance at their daughter's wedding. And I can kind of dive into that one a little bit. But, you know, I got some career advice around, you know, kind of throw out the title and, you know, think about what it is you really do and the impact you really want to have. And, you know, at Spirus Health, we find patients that are chronically ill that want to dance at their daughter's wedding, and we help make that happen.
I love that. I think it's such a important thing. I find that the elderly are really underserved in a lot of ways. And especially as they grow older and they lose some of that physical ability and that mental ability, you know, lengthening life, creating not just longer life, but a lifespan that's healthy and one that you feel good when you wake up. You know, that's something that we're getting better at as a society, but there's still so much to do there. I'm interested why you were so drawn to this mission. Do you know, I assume you have elderly family in your life. Was there something specific that happened in your career? What drew you to Spirus Health and particularly helping the elderly?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, have you ever cared for, you know, a sick aunt or a sick parent, Oz? I mean, is that something that you've been a part of in your life?
Yeah. So listen, I'll tell you that my grandmother on my father's side, I was her only grandson. And this person, I could say unequivocally, and I don't know how many people could say this about anybody, but I was the most important person in her life. She wrote me every month as a kid, sent me a $20 check, checked in on me, handwritten letters. And because of that, I gave her everything I could. And I would go fly out cross country to be with her. She was intimately involved with all of her great grandchildren and just had such a big impact on me. And then unfortunately, she passed away a few years ago. And as the executor of her estate and as the person that she was looking at to kind of take care of her, I had to help get her into hospice. When it came to that, I had to help manage everything from a healthcare perspective. And I was fortunate to have, you know, had some good contacts in the Southern California area where she lived that helped. But if not for that, like, I don't know what I would have done. And so it was really, really important that I had providers that I could trust, because this is one of the most important people and most impactful people in my life. And in her later years, especially as she started to get, you know, less healthy, I wanted to make sure that she had as good of an environment and conditions as possible. So absolutely, I've gone through that. I know how important it is. And I know I'm very lucky and blessed to have been able to hopefully take care of her the way that she deserved to be taken care of. But I know that's not the case for everybody. So absolutely, I know.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And hey, I appreciate you sharing that personal story with me, Oz. And I think about it this way, like, one, I'm sure she was very grateful to have you. And then what if she didn't have you, right? Or say, you know, she's in Southern California, you're in Miami, you're busy, you've got a family, you're running a business. So I'd kind of frame it this way, Oz, like, would life have been better for you and her if there was a nurse that was in her home at least once a month in person, checking on her meds, checking on her, you know, making sure she's got food, right, in the refrigerator, and then touching base with her via cell phone, via text, email, all sorts of ways, right? Pulling together the resources available to her, like you said, hospice. I'm sure her insurance provider probably had some care in the community that they could put her in touch with. And then just imagine a nurse, right? And nurses are the ones that get stuff done. You know this as an experienced, you know, person in the healthcare world. Like, imagine if a nurse was there, a Spiris nurse taking care of her. Would that have made it easier? Because that's kind of why we started Spiris.
I love that. And like for me, like my grandmother, she grew up in Germany. She's a very independent woman. My grandfather passed away quite a bit of time. But there is something to even the loneliness, too, that comes with it. It's not just the somebody taking care of you and looking out for you. It's the connection. It's the community. As you get older, and you know, one of the truths of life is that as you get older, like the people that are the closest to you and have been such an informative part of your life pass away, move on, right? And, you know, that can be a very lonely feeling. So absolutely, that sounds like something that would have been an amazing thing to have available. And I really admire what the company's doing from that perspective.
Yeah, that isolation part of it, Oz, you know, I appreciate you raising that. It's real. So many elderly patients, particularly those that don't have a lot of financial resources. Maybe it's a what we call a dual eligible patient, Medicaid and Medicare patient. You're oftentimes living alone and you don't have family around. You don't have resources. And it's that interpersonal connection that you talked about. Someone that's there in person to be with you and to care about you. You know, that I mentioned the story at the beginning around like one of our nurses was talking to one of her COPD patients. And he said, look, all I want to do is dance with my daughter at her wedding. And it's coming up in 3 months. But I've got COPD and my knees are bothering me. I'm not eating well. I can't exercise. So then with a nurse there in person, you put together a quick care plan. Hey, how are we going to get you on the dance floor? And it's that kind of interaction and figuring out those goals that matter, really matter to people when you can see better health outcomes. I'll share another story, you know, on that isolation front. We had a patient that was dealing with depression. And unfortunately, this patient was living alone and really struggling with their depression. And when you're struggling with depression, other areas of your health are going to be negatively impacted, as you know, right? You might not be motivated to take your medication. You might not be motivated to eat better. You might not be motivated to get outside and exercise. So one of our nurses, you know, arrived at this patient's house and really saw that he was struggling with isolation. And she said, you know, we've got to find a way for this patient to be motivated on a daily basis to really have a connection. Mm-hmm. You're going to love this story. So she said, why don't you get a pet? And the patient thought, okay, maybe that's a good idea. And the nurse is thinking, all right, you know, if this patient that's depressed, you know, gets a cat or a dog, it's going to give them a good purpose every day, right? Got to get out, got to walk the dog, get some fresh air, head to the grocery store, you know, get the food, take the animal to the vet, et cetera.
Yep.
So long story short, this is like 2 months ago. The nurse comes back to that patient's house, not a pet dog, not a pet cat, a baby kangaroo.
Oh my God. I knew in my head this was going in a different direction with the pet. I had so many animals running through my head.
Right.
I got to tell you, I didn't get to kangaroo. That's amazing.
Yeah, why so kangaroo? It's such a fun story, right? And then all of a sudden, you know, with this small little idea of, hey, why don't you get a pet? And then there's a baby kangaroo running around this person's house. His whole life changed, right? You know, it's fun stories like that when you get healthcare providers that care into people's yep. homes, lots can happen.
I love that, man. What I really appreciate about, you know, I noticed this from the first bit of our conversation, you're so passionate and fulfilled in this space. You know, you can tell that your work matters so much to you. And, you know, if I can relate it to myself in one way, when I initially got into, I was in technology and then I got into recruiting. At first I was pretty money motivated. You know, I was like, well, I can make incentive here and I could, you know, kind of make my own way. And that was really exciting for me as somebody who'd been in a corporate job where that's not always the case.
Yep.
And then over time, I started to realize that I was having a really big impact on people's lives, whether we were relocating them, getting them raises, giving them good advice in their own professional careers. And you just felt like I started to realize that like, hey, this industry is a little bit different than I think the stigma that's out there, or maybe people who are not in it, then they understand you're really, you know, you're really changing lives and you're really impacting it. And then about 4 or 5 years ago, we really started to make a really dedicated push into the healthcare space. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, we've worked with some amazing startups that really focus on the elderly in particular, both in-home care or creating, you know, different areas that they can go visit there, or telehealth, whatever it may be, to try to up elderly care. We also work with a company like Papa that sends buddies over to have people, you know, be around. And so,
yeah, that's a great one. Yep.
Yeah. And working with these companies, now that took that whole changing people's lives to a different level. Healthcare is a special industry and a special place. And God knows there's all different types of issues for it. It's certainly imperfect in a lot of different ways, especially here in the United States. But at the end, when it's done well, and when you're taking care of people and helping them get back to health, or giving them, you know, comfort when they felt isolated, or helping them through, or helping bring baby kangaroos into their life, man, it's just, it feels good. It feels good. It doesn't mean it's easy. It doesn't mean it doesn't come without its challenges.
Right.
But I feel so fulfilled in my work. And I'm so lucky that we've had so many great customers and clients that are impacting patients in such a positive way. And I have that same passion you do, but I can even just see it coming out of your eyes when you talk. So it's really exciting to hear that.
Yeah, look, I was at a conference this week. I was grateful to listen to the CEO and chairman of Rush. I live up here in Chicago, as you know. And it was a health equity conference, right? And so, as you know, based on the color of your skin, how much money you have, like it is well known that is a driver of health outcomes. I learned something this week. He said that there is a 15-year death gap. And by that, like when people, how long their life expectancy is based on whether you've got brown or black skin, or based on your zip code. And Rush's goal is to cut that in half. And wow. How inspiring is that, right? Like,
so inspiring. That's amazing. And that's really like making a big impact on a lot of people who need that type of care, concern, and intention around helping change their outcomes. I love that. I think that's amazing.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, that's so at Spirus, we believe that, you know, regardless of what insurance you have, regardless of how much money you have, regardless of what chronic conditions you have, you should be able to age gracefully in your home, right? And it's tragic. That. Like you... I'm kind of a policy wonk, Oz, and you know, I picked that up at University of Chicago. My gosh, we spend 25% of the healthcare spend takes place in the last year of people's lives. And that's just an outcome that patients don't want, providers don't want to be, you know, delivering complex surgeries, you know, in the last 6 months of people's lives. But that's kind of how the system works when it's a fee-for-service healthcare system. And so there's a better way to do it. It's called value-based care. It's really bad branding, value-based care. It sounds like it's, you know, discount healthcare, but all value-based care is tying together financial incentives to better patient outcomes and delivering care in a way that patients, you know, so they can stay at home and not end up in the ER and not have costly hospitalizations.
So I want to talk a little bit about philosophy on leadership, right?
Sure.
And I know that leadership is really important to you. You've had some great examples of leadership throughout your career, but it sounds like you've had some great, you know, examples of leadership personally as well. Tell us a little bit, what examples did you have maybe growing up of some great leadership?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of why I got into healthcare, Oz, I think it sticks back to, goes back to my mom. So my mom was a social worker at Rush, actually, one of the worst kind of neighborhoods in Chicago. It's Chicago's West Side. And she would go in after women had been either abused sexually or abused physically, and she would counsel those women. And you can imagine, you know, these are calls that come in at 3, 4, 5 in the morning. And if my dad was traveling for work, you know, I'd go in with her. So it's just kind of like part of my DNA as a kid was hopping in the car, you know, at 5 in the morning and it's 10 degrees in Chicago and going into Rush. And I didn't, obviously, when I was a kid, you know, my mom didn't really let me know the details of why she was there or who she was helping or why she was helping. But I kind of put that together later in life. And for sure, that's a motivation for me. I've got a fun kind of, not really a business leadership story about my mom.
No, leadership comes in all forms. Go with it. Yeah, tell me.
Yeah, so I think that so often in business or in life, right, we're used to this automatic, immediate gratification. That's the world we live in. You know, put something online. How many likes did you get? Takes an hour, right? So Oz, I'm going to take you back to 1970. Mm. And the moral of the story here is, you know, sometimes the rewards come 50 years later. So in 1970, my mom wanted to play golf for the Michigan State women's golf team. And at the time, they didn't have a team. So she marched into the athletic office and she had a whole pitch together about, you know, I need $800 and me and my friend are going to travel to this tournament and, you know, we're going to stay in this hotel. And she's talking to some low-level athletic director who's not giving her the time of day. The football coach, however, overhears her and kind of says, come over here. You know, what do you need? And she starts giving him the whole spiel and he kind of stops her and says, what do you need? She says, you know, I need $890. And the football coach takes out a checkbook, writes her a check. And that was the start of the Michigan State women's team. They went off in this tournament and they played.
That's amazing.
Kind of a fun story, right? So 1970. Yeah. Fast forward to 2023. My mom's playing golf in Florida. And there's some young women at her club on the driving range. And my mom says, who's over there playing? And one of her friends says, oh, that's the Michigan State women's team. And my mom says, wow, like I need to go talk to some of those girls. And she finds the coach. She tells the coach the story I just told you about how she started the team in 1970. And she looks at the coach and she says, I would like a varsity letter.
Wow.
I think the coach's first reaction was probably like, who's this crazy lady? You know, maybe she needs a spirits nurse to be giving her, you know, checking on her med adherence.
Yep.
But long story short, a couple weeks ago, she got a varsity letter. She's 78 years old. And now she's a varsity letter award winner from Michigan State. And, you know, that it's for something she did 50 years ago.
That is insane to have played a part in getting that program started.
Yep.
And I don't know what their level of success is or not at Michigan State, but that's obviously probably a really strong program. And for her to see that, and then first thing she says that comes out of her mouth is, can I get a letter? And it happened. The power of asking, that right. is amazing.
Your yeah, you know it. And we know it in the business world, right? Sometimes you just got to make the ask. And
open mouths get fed, right?
Exactly. That's exactly right. So I love that story, you know, just because it's a good reminder, you know, for those of us in the business world, like we get a lot of no's, we get turned down a lot. Days are frustrating. But you never know something that you do today that might have an impact 50 years down the road.
Yeah. And listen, let's take another angle on it from a leadership perspective. That football coach who overheard that didn't have to do anything there, takes out a checkbook, and heard her and made her felt heard and did something that caused a tremendously great impact for not just her, your mom, but for the program. So I find that to be leadership all over the place.
Exactly.
I love that story. I really appreciate you sharing it. One of the things that kind of ties into it is like, I have this philosophy of being long-term greedy, right? I think if you're short-term greedy about things, you make bad decisions, small-time decisions, the type of things that pile up over time and end up biting you in the you know what. But if you continue to invest in relationships, if you continue to do the right thing by people, if you continue to treat people well, that's something that's really, really, really impactful and comes back usually tenfold to you. And that's been to me, it's a great business strategy to be thinking that long term and to be acting as if and doing the right thing by people. And even if you don't see that immediate return, it eventually comes. What do you do today that shapes tomorrow? What are the things where you're planting seeds now that you hope to see great outcomes in the future with?
Yeah, it's a great question. Have you read Infinite Game by Simon Sinek?
Simon Sinek, I absolutely yeah. have. Yeah, great book.
Yeah, I mean, it's when we were at VillageMD, which is the company I was at before joining Spirus, Paul Martino and other co-founders, what they would always say, Simon, is look, Simon, Oz.
Simon says, I know what you meant. You're good.
We're on a 100-year journey to fix healthcare and to make healthcare better in the United States. And we've talked about it, right? Like throughout this, you know, throughout today's discussion, there's a lot broken in healthcare in the United States. You can't flip a switch overnight and have that, you know, just all be done. So you've got to take this, when you take this longer term approach of, hey, there's something I can do today. It might not help anybody tomorrow. It might not work in 10 years, but 100 years from now, it can work. And it changes your mindset from, hey, what do I need to deliver this quarter? What happens if we don't hit this annual target, et cetera?
Yeah, I love that. And one of the things that really stood out to me about the infinite game is this idea that when you play a finite game, you're keeping score, you're thinking about wins and losses. Right. When you're playing a game that has no end result, right? It's about doing the right thing and continuing to do the right thing over time. And that was a big mind frame change for me. And so
how do you utilize it at your business?
We're flipping it around. I love this. All right. So, you know, there's a lot of times where there's something that'll happen with a customer and it will mean we're not getting the full maximum financial, you know, output that we probably could, or there will be a situation where, with an employee where, you know, and maybe we're investing in some sort of training for them that doesn't mean something for our direct company, but it's giving this person a skill that they're going to be able to use throughout the rest of their career and life. And that's the more important thing. There are so many small decisions that we make like that all the time. And of course, you have to balance it a little bit by, you know, the Simon Sinek is famous for saying that if a car is an automobile, money is the fuel, right? That allows the car to move, but it's not the reason you have a car. And it's the same thing, right? And it's to get to A to B, right? And at the end of the day, I really believe that we're playing this infinite game here in our business, and it's to impact the lives positively of our employees, of our stakeholders, of our customers, of our vendors, of our community. And by playing that infinite game, it's led to a lot of prosperity and success. And so it's something that I'll never get away from. It's something I'll continue to do. And even when it bites me or it comes back and it doesn't have any type of return, that's not the point. The point is doing the right thing and doing enough of it always leads to great outcomes. I do want to get into the hiring aspect because it feels like you know talent pretty well. You've brought in talent into your organization. I'm sure you've groomed talent and helped develop them. So, and this is the show where I'm obsessed with learning about the great leaders and how they hire. How do they do it? What makes them different? What are they looking for? So I want to start here. Do you have a core hiring philosophy? Is there one that stands out to you as one that is really important to how you brought people into an organization?
Yeah, pretty simple. What's your why?
I love
so in less than a sentence, it's what's your why? And I want to know your professional why and your personal why. And I play that forward. You know, if I think about Spirus, if someone is interested in a world where people can age in grace in their homes, despite their chronic diseases, let's go, right? Let's roll up our sleeves together and we're going to go figure it out. And I want to know their personal why, because we all know that we work for a reason, and the reasons we work are more important than the work itself. Ooh, right.
I love that.
And then when a new team member comes onto my team, I view my role as their manager, their leader, as helping them achieve their personal and professional whys, right? What are your goals personally? What are your goals professionally? And if I can help you achieve that, then I'm, you know, succeeding as your mentor, your leader, your boss.
I really love that. Is that your favorite question to ask in an interview, or do you have a different question that you love to go to?
It's as simple as that. I wish it was, you know, more nuanced.
No. Listen, I'm just, I want to make sure, because I want to ask you it. So what is your why?
What's my why?
Yeah. And then I'll answer.
Yeah. So I believe, right, that elderly patients should age at home gracefully, not be run into the hospital, not be having issues with their chronic conditions. They should be able to dance at their daughter's weddings. They shouldn't be alone dealing with isolation. That's my why for Spirus, right? And my why for healthcare is, when I look back on it, I want to be able to share those stories, you know, with my kids and my grandkids around, hey, like, I helped a guy dance at his daughter's wedding. I helped a guy that was dealing with depression, you know, get a kangaroo. It's those types of stories, right, that keep you motivated. So that's my why. And then my personal why is my kids. I want to be a good dad, and I want to provide for my kids, and was fortunate to have that growing up, and I want to return that and pay that forward.
Love that. Yeah. So I'll answer it too. My why, I'm really driven by impact. And
yeah,
a lot of people, you know, what's the meaning of life? Why are we here? Why all these big existential questions? And
yep.
I have a bit of a humanist approach to this. To me, the meaning of life is, how can you make your mark and positively impact people in as much and as an intentional and great way as possible? And so when I look at that from the professional prism, right, I think about building a company, right? There's a lot of things that could be different in government and politics. And so, I love to eventually maybe look at that as an opportunity, but really I'm focused on my company because this is my zip code. This is my city. Yep. Whatever I see wrong in the world around, I can build here and build better and be for the people. And hopefully those people feel that and take that to our customers and make a positive impact. And I want to, the vehicle I've chosen is that I feel hiring and talent acquisition is an opportunity that's ripe for disruption, that's ripe to be better, that is so impactful on companies and individuals' lives. And some reform is needed, much like we feel like in the healthcare space. And so that is what drives me. That is the vehicle I believe that I can leave a legacy and leave lasting impact on making things better for the future generations. And then when I look at it from a personal perspective, I have four kids, and I think one of the most underrated ways that we can exponentially make the world a better place is to really focus in on those kids. And if they have kids, if I do a great job with all four of my kids and they have more kids and do a great job with those kids, we're really adding to the world and making the world a better place. And I think that gets lost a little bit. As much as I want to impact all the people around me and the communities and different, and I do different things around that, my biggest focus is on my children. And there's two different things around that, right? One is I want to be able to set the bar very high for them professionally and as a person of character, that they have to rise above that and achieve it. And then I have to give them the tools to empower them to be able to do that. And so those are my two guiding forces as a father. And that's my why. That's what I want to leave on this world and leave as an imprint. Would you hire me?
Yes, I'm inspired by your story. Thank you for sharing. I mean, I think about it on the hiring front and the work that you and your team do on that. If you can help someone get a job, right, or think about a different career path, just the butterfly effect of what that could mean down the road for that person, that family, their children, their college educations, whatever it may be, what a cool place for you to play, and grateful to be a part of it.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I had a couple years in, I had somebody call me and say, Oz, you helped relocate me to Dallas. There's a bigger Indian community here. My family's so happy. Thank you so much. I had another person come back and say, Oz, you got me a $30,000 raise, and now I can send my son to private school. I had somebody come back and say, Oz, you were working on me on a potential new opportunity, but then you told me that maybe I should just ask for promotion at my current company. And I did that, and I've been promoted twice since. So it's like, you're realizing, wow, this is going to be things that really impact these people, these companies, these cities, these economies. And I take it super seriously. And I think because of that attitude, I think that's one of the reasons that we've had success and why we look for people to bring to the organization who feel that same way and want to make that same impact. So I think there's a lot of
doubt. Hey, look, you said that you can feel it, because I know you're in Miami and I'm in Chicago and we're talking, via Zoom here. But I can feel your passion for it, and no doubt your company is going to make the right decisions with that long-term view that are going to have that huge impact on many, many people that you touch.
I appreciate it, brother. I appreciate it. We're in chapter 2 or 3 of what we hope is a really long, amazing book. So
exactly.
We're going to keep working on that. What about when you made a mistake on a hire? Because we all have done that, right? Is there any type of theme or any type of thing that you look back on, or maybe something that you've grown with that has helped you become better at that as you've grown in your career?
Yes. Solicit feedback from other colleagues and really listen. As I look back to some of my, I'm thinking back to a specific story when I was a regional manager at Abbott Labs. I had decided as the hiring manager that I was locked in on a candidate, and I brought that person in for, to meet others on the team. And I had blinders on, and some of those interviews didn't go real well from people that were a little bit lower than me, quote unquote, in the organization. And if I just listened and not kind of already had predetermined what my decision was, we would have avoided a really bad hire. So I think it's always good, Oz, to get feedback from others up, down, sideways throughout the organization, but not just as a check the box exercise. Like, you got to actually take the feedback and let it, give yourself the humility to let it change your opinion. And not just think you've got it right because, you know, you're the one in charge.
I'm a strong opinions held lightly guy. I wouldn't even bring in somebody into the interview process if I wasn't going to listen to them in the first place. It's a waste of time for everybody involved. And ultimately, we have our bias. Even if you've been hiring for 20, 25 years, even if you've been involved in as many interviews as I have, you're going to have biases. You're going to have unconscious and conscious biases that come up. And that's why having good, smart people around you who will tell you like it is, it doesn't mean they're always right, but understanding their feedback, listening to their feedback and taking it into account is super, super important. And one of the things I try to avoid is, you know, if I'm early in the interview process, I'm very careful about sharing my feedback because at the end of the day, as the CEO, you know, I might get people to question their own gut instincts on things. Well, God saw it this way. I might feel differently. Or maybe they, you know, they look at me as the hippo, right? The highest paid opinion in the room. And then they start to, you know, think maybe I missed something, or they start to shape their feedback around it. And that's absolutely not what I want. I am one view and many times not even the best view. And so I love having good, diverse set of interviewers on the slate that I listen to their feedback. We dive into why they felt the way they did. And then at some point you do have to make a decision, but it's important to take in as much information as possible. And that's when it's going to lead to more likelihood of success. So I'm glad that's something that you went through and you learned, because I think it's critical to be.
I've never heard of hippo before. Thank you for sharing. What a great concept that is. Highest paid opinion.
Right? So yeah. So that's there you go. We're all learning today. Last one on the hiring side. If I ask you for the best hire you've ever made, Mike, does anybody come to mind?
What comes to mind is the best person I promoted. So I didn't hire them into the company. But I've got a woman in mind, you know, when you asked that question, and she was passed up for promotions, consistently. And the reason why is because she didn't play the politics very well. And she just wasn't kind of playing the game to get the promotion. But when you looked at what she delivered to the company and you looked at her work ethic, she deserved it. And it was the best decision I made, because she was a rock star in the role and she had been held back, you know, for, like you said, people have biases, when they head into interviews and they're making decisions around who gets the promotion. And, I think in her case, she was older. People kind of thought, oh, she's kind of on the 15th, 16th hole of her career. We should promote someone younger that's going to have a longer run at it. You just have to do the best you can to be aware of biases that we all bring to any circumstance and really be diligent about avoiding those so we can make better decisions, you know, for our companies and also for the people that we're considering.
Yeah, I really love that. I mean, I think one of the things about hiring is seeing what other people don't see.
And great point.
I'll tell you what I mean by that. Everybody can draft LeBron James. Everybody can draft Peyton Manning if you got the first pick.
Yeah.
Maybe Caleb Williams. We'll see. But it's when you unearth something that other people didn't see, that's when you're really doing an amazing job of hiring, of scouting, of investing, whatever it is. It's the things that others don't see that makes you uncommonly good at this. That's what really differentiates the good from the great when it comes to hiring. So I got to ask you then, brother, what's the website if people want to go find out more about Spiris Health?
Yeah, spirishealth.com.
S-P-I-R-A-S health.com.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yep. Okay. And, you know, we're based in Nashville. We're taking care of close to 3,000 patients in Tennessee. And then we've just started in Southern California as well. But we'll be in a couple of new states here by the end of the year that we're excited about. So welcome the opportunity to connect with folks that want to learn more about what we do.
I love that. By the way, MSH got a big presence out of Nashville. Great healthcare community out there. Love the city, love the food, love the drinks. Another one of my favorite cities. We might have to do a little tour of Nashville up to Chicago. It's not too far of a jaunt from there, so we'll figure that out.
Love it.
All right, one last one. If you had some advice to give your younger self that you didn't know then, but that you know now, say you were talking to 20-year-old Mike, what would you go back and tell?
Oh, gosh, a lot. I would love to hear your answer to what you would tell your young self, Oz. One thing that jumps to mind is spend some time thinking about what you're good at. I kind of followed others in my first part of my career. A lot of folks that I knew were going to Wall Street, so I just went to Wall Street too, because I didn't really spend any time thinking about what it is that's really going to make me happy or what I'm really good at. I think one of my natural strengths, what I love doing, is connecting with people. And then I took a job that requires you to sit in front of a computer screen for 20 hours a day. So I would have done that differently, right? It's not an experience I regret per se, but spend some real hard brain time around what it is that you're good at naturally.
Yeah.
Now, conversely, I'd also would say, take jobs that freak you out a little bit. If there's a job opportunity out there that makes you nervous and you get that butterflies in your stomach because you just don't know whether you can do it, those are the jobs to jump at, because that's when you're going to grow, when you're figuring out how to swim and not drown in a new swimming pool. And then on the back end of that, that's where real growth happens, I think, in people's careers. So feel like I'm being a little bit contradictory in my answer, but those are two things I'd probably share.
Is contradictory. Those are both good forms of advice. If you asked me, and I think you did, I would just say, and I have a different answer every time everybody flips the question back on me. But the one that I am lucky to have found out pretty quickly after my age 20 was, I think the first thing before you can really provide value to a relationship, a partner, a work environment, the community around you, you first must understand yourself. And so I would do a lot of deep exploration when I don't think anybody changes more than from the ages of 20 to 25. And like, if you start dating somebody at that age, right, when you're younger, and then all of a sudden, like, she's completely different at 25, 26, it's like, yeah, no shit. Right. We change a lot. We shape our values in that time. And then I think after that time, you start to, the core of who you are, for the most part, starts to stay the same. And so for me, I had to do some exploration around what mattered to me. What's important to me? What's important to me in a potential spouse? What's important to me in a friend? What am I good at from a work perspective? Like you talked about, what really kind of triggers me and puts me in a bad place so I can avoid that. And then you act with great intention to go seek those things out. Now that you know your code book, know that you know your playbook, now you actively go pursue roles that have those things that you want, or pursue relationships that have those things you want. And you know what your deal breakers are, and you know what gets you excited. And then you pursue those things with zest. And I think that is not a fail-proof way, but a great way to get going in your life professionally, financially, love interest, friendship-wise. You start to draw those things to you because you know what they are. You know yourself.
That's exactly right. Really well said. Couldn't have said it better myself.
I love that. All right. Now for you personally, list these teams in order of you're most excited if they win the championship. Bears, Bulls, Cubs, Blackhawks.
Cubs, Bears, Blackhawks, Bulls.
Ooh. All right, last one. I want you to rank these in order now. Michael Jordan, Walter Payton, Gordie Howe, or Andre Dawson?
Oh, Jordan, and then 50 Miles, and then the rest, right?
Wow. Mike Harlow, VP of Strategic Partnerships at Spirits Health. Thank you so much for coming on. I hope people check out the company. This is the show where we want to learn from the best of the best when it comes to identifying talent. You gave so many great stories and insights. I'm so grateful for it. I'm hopeful for our listeners. Please subscribe, leave some 5-star ratings and comments. Show keeps growing. It's only because of our community of listeners. I'm so appreciative of it. Mike, thanks for coming on. You did a great job, man. Appreciate it.
Oz, you're the best.
Thanks. All right, man. I'll see you in a bit.